It began with a dream. As mind became one with the machine, our consciousness was immersed in a digital reality as real as any other. We struggled to keep spirit alive, but, saturated by media, we lost our ability to dream and longed for escape from the ravaged earth. And so, it was given to us. A portal into a world of designer dreams, crafted for our escape. All who could afford the delights of the virtual fulfilled their desires in a realm of endless possibilities. A new breed of performer was born, whose dreams would be the opiate for the masses.
The following podcast contains some adult language and content. Proceed with caution. Hi, my name is Randy. I'd like to welcome you, and especially you to the podcast today, my 20th podcast. That deserves some fanfare and celebration, don't you think? Without further introduction, let's get started, shall we? If you'd like to hear the worst audio for a shopping mall that I've ever heard, a commercial that was made for East Hills Shopping Mall. The video is bad, but the audio is worse. Let's give it a listen. Yes, I bet you'll be humming that for days. Boots and pants and boots and pants. Really terrible. Let's get a little buggy here today and talk about wasps. Talk about your bed bugs. A huge wasp's nest was containing 5,000 insects discovered by Shock's son in his mother's spare room. Thousands of wasps made a huge nest in a bed in Winchester, Hampshire, and an estimated 5,000 wasps chewed through bedding, including a blanket. It was discovered by a man in his mother's spare room she rarely went in. Pest control experts said, "In 45 years, I've never seen anything like it." A son went into the rarely used bedroom in his mother's home and discovered thousands of wasps had made a giant nest in a bed. An estimated 5,000 wasps had created a nest by chewing through bedding, including a blanket and pillow. Pest control expert John Burkett was called to tackle the mound of wasps inside the mattress at the five-bedroom home in Winchester, Hampshire. And looking at the picture, that is huge. It looks like a huge moon rock with wasps all over it. And he said in 45 years he's never seen anything like it. There must have been 5,000 wasps. It was a job to deal with. I had to put all my protective gear on. At one stage there must have been 2,000 wasps buzzing around me. If anyone had gone in the room and not known, it would have been pretty serious. He added, they must have started making the nest at the start of May. It's amazing that the woman didn't realize she was living with them. We got a call that we normally do, but I thought it was unusual. It was a bedroom. I opened the door and I just couldn't believe it. The pillow was covered in his 3-foot wasp nest, and they were still busy building the nest. I tried to destroy as many as I could with the workers flying around the room. The nest came in half, so the room was completely full of wasps. I was covered in them. The homeowner was terrified. Mr. Burkett, who runs Longwood Services Exterminators, used chemical spray to kill the insects during the two-hour operation. He said the previous biggest nest he had ever found in a bedroom was about the size of a tennis ball. The woman, who did not want to be named, lives alone in the five-bedroom house in the St. Cross area town. She had not been in the spare room for several months, and it was only when her son opened the door that the massive nest was discovered. Hornet wasp colonies reach their peak population in late summer and contain 700 large angry insects. Wasp nests are even bigger and can contain up to 10,000 insects. The creatures may mobilize the entire nest to sting in the defense of an attack. Around 3 in 100 people suffer severe reactions to a wasp or hornet sting. Last month, the family was forced to flee Porthmore Beach in St. Ives, Cornwall, when an estimated 10,000-strong swarm of bees descended on their small sun tent and amassed inside. Lifeguards cordoned off the area and called in a beekeeper to collect the insects. Elsewhere, a shopper in central London was surrounded by a swarm of around 5,000 bees earlier this summer. The insects descended on a branch of Topshop, which sent the passengers by scrambling for cover. The passers-by. Witnesses said they could hardly see the sky as the colony made a nest in the bustling high street. 3 days later, in Cambridge, thousands of insects settled on the figure of Talos in the center of the city. Two police officers were sent to keep people away, and nearby restaurant closed its doors and windows as a precaution. But looking at these pictures of these wasps, that wasp nest is just huge, tennis ball size. This looks like about 30 tennis balls put together. It's just huge and covers the twin-size bed. But hopefully she's okay. And all the insects were eradicated. Okay, let's turn to this podcast's police blotter. In Grants Pass, Oregon, KPTV, a naked man had to be sedated at a hemp festival in southern Oregon after police said he damaged cars, started fights, and kicked a police officer. Oregon State troopers responded to the Jefferson State Hemp Expo in Grants Pass at 12:30 a.m. Sunday. The first troopers at the scene were led to a grass field where four men were restraining the suspect, who is described as naked, combative, and agitated on the ground. The suspect was identified as 27-year-old Timothy Sulks of Grants Pass. According to jail records, Sulks is 6'3 and 250 pounds. A witness pointed out one vehicle in the parking lot that had sustained heavy damage. Witnesses say he caused the damage while two frightened women were sitting inside the car. Police attempted to take Sulks into custody, but investigators said he kneed and kicked a trooper several times. Following a struggle, troopers got him into the back of a patrol car, but police said he continued to kick violently. Medical crews were called to the scene, and they determined that Sulks should be sedated so he could be taken by ambulance to Three Rivers Medical Center in Grants Pass for an examination. Troopers followed the ambulance to the hospital, where they were able to positively identify the suspect. Later in the morning, once the hospital was ready to release him, he was arrested and booked in the Josephine County Jail on charges of menacing, criminal mischief, and assaulting a public safety officer and resisting arrest. The Jefferson County Expo website said the annual event is a three-day music festival and educational hemp exposition featuring camping, artists, and guest speakers. Looking at this guy's mugshot, if you want the human equivalent of Bigfoot, you got it right here. Man, he's got the hair. Got the big hair and full beard, but it looks like he's seen his better days looking at his booking photo. This next story is an odd one. New technology leads police to a missing Canadian man living in Tahlequah. Let's pop this story up here. Tahlequah, Oklahoma. A cold case arises from the ashes after a man thought to be dead is found alive and well. Ronald Stan disappeared in Canada 37 years ago. His wife and kids thought he died in a fire, but he recently resurfaced near Tahlequah with a new name and new wife. It's the biggest news story in Canada, and it's all unfolded in eastern Oklahoma. Ronald Stan, who in 1977 was a 32-year-old married father of two, disappeared after a barn fire near London, Ontario. I remember this one quite well because we dug through dead pigs and so on with our boots on and done our very best to find human remains, retired Canadian firefighter Jim Walsh told CTV News in Canada. There was never a trace of Stan. So nearly a decade later, he was declared dead. But when an Ontario police audit pulled up Stan's file this summer, the case that had been closed was about to catch fire. Through new technology, police said they tracked down the 69-year-old Stan just outside Tahlequah, living as Jeff Walton. His Facebook page says he's retired and married with children and grandchildren. Walton's only neighbors, Gary Halborough and Billy Quick, said they had no idea the man next door was keeping such a secret. "Yeah, you could hide down here," Gary Halborough said, "quiet. We don't get much traffic, and that's why I'm here, dead-end street." "He seemed to be all right, a good old boy, but who knows," Billy Quick said. "I've known him for a while, but I don't guess I know him," the other neighbor said. No one seems to know why Walton or Stan left his family and life back in Canada, but one thing's for sure, it's a story that he's not interested in sharing. Canadian police says Walton will not face any charges. According to an Ontario paper, Walton's American son told a reporter he didn't know anything about his father's past life until this month, and neither did Walton's current wife. According to court records, she filed for divorce in Cherokee County a few weeks ago, apparently after learning the details of his disappearance. Stan's first wife, Deborah Proctor, released a statement saying, "We are truly saddened from this unimaginable deceit and betrayal." On August 1st, Deborah Proctor received a phone call at work from OPP that her husband of 14 and a half years, who had been in our lives for 16 and a half years, was instead a missing person from Ontario since 1977. The officer provided facts, details, and other information which left no doubt that Jeff Walton was really Ronald Stan. As of last week, Stan now resides in New Orleans with his son. "We are eternally grateful for the continuous love and support and prayers from family and friends that have carried us through this trauma. Please respect our privacy." Man, could you imagine the conversations that those two women are having with their girlfriends about this guy? What would make you do that? You'd think there'd been a more thorough search of the barn where there's a fire to find the guy. They didn't find any remains, but they just declared him dead after a lot of years, I guess. But that's just an amazing story. I'm your podcast host, and I'm feeling super moist today. Let me explain. Let me pop up this story here that came to me in a Facebook post that the word moist is probably the most hated word in the English language, period. The University of Pennsylvania linguistics professor Mark Lieberman explained to Good why we hate moist and that. Word aversion is different from word rage, which is where people get angry at jargon or slang associated with a despised group or upset because a word or phrase is felt to be incorrectly used or annoyed at language that they perceive as redundant or overly complicated or pretentious or a cliche or trendy or politically incorrect. that kind of dislike is more common. Grudges against irregardless, synergy, like, don't go there, or a retard fit comfortably in the word rage department. How about the word selfie? The word itself has an association making it unpleasant or even disgusting for some people. People don't like hearing moist. They also don't like the way their mouth feels when they say it. It seems a mysterious psychological process at play here, but is it really? I'm going to go out on a limb and point my finger directly at Betty Crocker. I'm looking at you, Betty. And it's the moist cake mix commercial for officially ruining the word moist. You want a smoking gun? Here it is. See how long you can manage to sit through this commercial without wanting to punch a hole in the wall. And let's hear the commercial now.
I wish my mix baked up this moist.
Well, yours is moist. It's just not super moist.
New Super Moist is the name of a whole new kind of layer cake mix from Betty Crocker.
Your wife's cake is really moist.
It's super moist.
What? New Super Moist has special pudding in the mix to make it unbelievably moist.
Glad I switched mixes.
The old ones are moist.
But they're not super moist.
Other cake mixes may be moist, but they're not super moist.
Now I officially hate the word moist. I was reading today on the website Vice that there are two different news stories, and they want you to vote on which is the biggest crybaby of the week. Two different news stories. Let me pop them up here. The first one is a babysitter, Martha Dreher, allegedly. The incident is the woman didn't like the kids she was babysitting. The appropriate response probably would be quitting. The actual response was she allegedly set their house on fire. Earlier this week, the Williams family of Austin, Texas, returned to their family home to find that there had been a fire in the bedrooms of their two daughters. The fires had been contained and eventually burned out, but not before causing thousands of dollars worth of damage. According to police, when the family checked the security cameras, they saw their babysitter, 57-year-old Martha Dreher, drive up to the house and let herself in. When she left 20 minutes later, there were allegedly flames visible in the girl's bedroom windows. According to Glenn Williams, the father of the family, Martha had previously told them that she was unhappy with her job and wanted to quit. She said it was horrible, that the girls, my oldest, had been very disrespectful, he said. He believes the fire was started as an act of revenge. They could have set the whole house on fire. And they actually closed the door so the fire was maintained in those rooms and burned itself out. So it was definitely a vendetta against the two girls, he said. Martha was arrested and charged with arson. She maintains that she didn't start the fire. But Martha's attorney said the thing that we are going to be pushing for, in addition to obviously a lie detector test and everything else that we can do to prove her innocence, as evidence. And this is story number two, crybaby number two, about the UK legal system, facts, and Universal Pictures. The incident was a guy who was allegedly caught illegally sharing the Fast and Furious movie, illegally videotaping it. And the appropriate response, some kind of fine, I guess. But he was videotaping in the back of a movie theater. And he was sent to prison for 33 months. Earlier this year, a 25-year-old Philip Danks from Wolverhampton, England, filmed Fast and Furious 6 from the back of the movie theater near his home. He posted his recording of the film to the torrent site, putting his tag, the Coder 3R, in the file name. It was downloaded more than 700,000 times. Because Phillips uses that tag name, and he also used it on the dating site Plenty of Fish, investigators were able to trace the movie upload to him. He was arrested at his home and charged with three counts of distributing pirated copies of films. He appeared in court earlier this week, where he pleaded guilty to all three charges. During his trial, the court heard that Philip had made over $1,650 from selling pirated films. According to the BBC report, the judge who sentenced Philip said his behavior was bold, arrogant, and cocksure. The ex-boyfriend of Philip's sister was also charged for uploading a second copy of the film to the internet. He was sentenced to 120 hours of community service. The Federation Against Copyright Theft, which is a UK-based trade organization that fights piracy, claims that Universal Pictures lost out on millions of pounds due to Philip's upload. It is unclear how the makers of Fast and Furious 6 are going to cope with the massive financial loss. So, you, the listener, can vote on that. Send me an email, which you think is the bigger crybaby. They got their mug shot. Well, one is not a mug shot, but they got a picture of the guy who filmed the movie. And they also got a picture of the babysitter, and she looked like she's been seeing her better days. This next item is also from Vice. It is an article by Meg Mankins. It also looks like kind of a blog post, actually. But the title of it is Stress Makes Me Horny. Now let's see if I can give this erotic reading justice. 10 minutes remaining. The teacher cautions from between the pages of People magazine. I have 4 test pages to go, and I'm stressed out. My heart begins to pound. I feel it beating in the crotch of my mud jeans. Mud jeans. Haven't heard of that apparel. Aside from the inexplicable rash last summer, it is the first time I felt anything down there. By the time the teacher says 5 minutes left, I'm solving for circumference and full-on riding the seat. All this repositioning has broken the concentration of a classmate behind me who kicks my chair hard and menacingly whispers, "We all know you're farting, Meg. Stop fucking moving." Suddenly the bell rings. With 5 problems to go, my stress has reached a breaking point, and so has her clit. I finished the test, and I came hard. I turned my test to the teacher, who unknowingly became my first sexual partner by administering a routine unit assessment. Since that hot, sticky summer afternoon in the middle school geometry class, stress has been my biggest turn-on. As a teen awkwardly stumbling into sexuality, I tried to find other things that could stimulate my senses in the same way that my geometry test had done. I've watched the grimmest, grainiest porn. I've read erotica from every GeoCities site left on the internet. I've experimented with role-playing ranging from doctor-patient scenario to fake Hanson Brothers porn. No matter how hard I try, the only things that consistently get me off are situations that induce a particular type of acute anxiety. My top 3 sexual situations are traffic jams, getting trapped in bad conversations, and being late to an event. Not all stress turns me on, though. Financial obligations are a definite turnoff. Well, I can see that. I don't like those either. I don't derive any pleasure from being submissive to the tune of $12,000 or turning in my rent check. From that first experience of trying to finish an assessment with a rigid deadline to the more adult struggle of battling traffic to make it to the airport, my anxiety around time is both awful and arousing. It's like my brain and nervous system are unable to separate the two. It's a twisted form of sexual control. The best part about this, when I'm masturbating and imagining these scenarios, I'm able to think and feel like I'm running late to a meeting without actually facing any of the real-world repercussions that come with tardiness. Tell me how much you like it. And they'll tell me how much you like it. I don't know about this. But she talks about her forgettable sex partners. Sounds like she needs a man. But I guess cheap vodka doesn't do anything for her either, she says. But that's her story. You can read about it on Vice. It's an interesting tale. By the looks of the clock on the wall, this podcast is coming to a close. I'd like to thank you, and especially you for listening to it. This podcast, my 20th, which is quite a milestone for me, has been kind of a test. I was trying to see how fast I could turn around another podcast, and I've done this in approximately about a day. It has been a whirlwind of editing. But if you would like to email me, my address is randyms12, the number is 12, at gmail.com. Please do. Tell me if you like the show, you think the show sucks ass, whatever you think. If you come across it, I know it's not one of the best advertised podcasts, but hopefully you can find it on the Podomatic address. My hoster site also has a PayPal donations tab. So if you feel the urge to donate a little coin, it's always would be appreciated. And the Podomatic site will probably be the one that I advertise the most because it seems to be the most stable, and I've just upgraded to add additional megabytes and storage. So hopefully that'll work out fine for the time being. And as always, I hope everyone is having a safe and festive Labor Day holiday weekend here in the U.S. And until next time, I hope you have a pleasant evening and a happy ending tonight. It's been a bye-bye, long folks. Road, getting from there to here, it's been a long time, but my time is finally near. I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky, and they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind. 'Cause I've got faith of the heart.